Star all over here. I think we're ready to get going this morning. I'm Jennifer Axt, and I am the general manager for EMC's State and Local Government Education Business for the Americas. And I have to tell you, I am delighted to be here amongst all you ladies, and then to attend another Watermark Conference for Women. And EMC is the official sponsor this year for the Technology Pavilion, which is very exciting. It is EMC's and my personal honor to be here for the second year of our sponsorship for this amazing conference. And every year, it brings a platform of impressive speakers, topics, interactive activities that speak directly to the global challenges and opportunities for women, which I'm sure you can agree from this morning alone, obviously. I just love the Life is Good. Have you guys bought their t-shirts before? I do want to take a moment, though, and speak to the question that maybe a few of you have, and that is, what is happening between Dell and EMC? And what I can tell you today, right? Labeled as the largest tech-to-tech merger in the history, $80 billion and 170,000 employees coming together. The press and the media and the analysts all agree that the combination will create what we believe will be the industry leader in IT market today. It also affords us the opportunity to actually establish a new company culture, because we've got two large companies coming together with very talented workforces that will create an environment of diversity and inclusion. Michael Dell will lead this entity. Our enterprise business will incorporate all the products and services required to fully serve our customers. And it will be headquartered in Hopkinton, Massachusetts, where EMC is headquartered today. I'm actually really excited about it. I used to work for Dell for 9 years, so it's amazing. I've been at EMC for 8, Dell at 9. I wonder if we can just combine that as 17 years, right? Anyway. Regardless, you didn't come here to hear about me talk about that. So let's get back to the session at hand. I am thrilled that you are here to participate in leadership track called Transformational Teams, Building and Leading Diverse Teams for Ultimate Business Advantage. Your moderator today is none other than the wonderful Trudy
Bourgeois.
Trudy is the CEO and president of the Center for Workforce Excellence. Not only is she the best-selling author, speaker, and trainer and coach, she's a teacher at heart. Trudy believes that when people can learn and grow, they can achieve. As a renowned and respected authority for leadership development, change management, workplace transformation, there is no one better than to lead today's session. So, welcome, Trudy.
Thank you very much. And I think you should declare that they compensate you even more, because after all, you have both sides of the spectrum. Would you guys agree?
Thank you
very much. Good morning, everybody. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I said good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Okay, that sounds so much better, so much better. So thank you for taking time out of your schedule to come and listen to what I believe will be a very thought-provoking experience and conversation that I'm going to leave with some really great leaders who have passion around this area of leading transformational teams. And just so that we can get a better perspective of who we're talking to, because we really want to make sure that we give you some practical tips that you can take away with you. How many of you lead teams right now, by show of hands? Oh my gosh, wow. All right, so the first thing that I want to say to you then, for given 90% of everybody in here is leading a team, is you need to be the model. And honestly, you guys, my opinion is that there's never been a better time than now to be a woman in the business world. Okay?
Yes! Yeah, exactly! Get excited!
Now, you know, I spent my 18 years in corporate, and I had nothing called the value proposition that today's woman has. And so we're going to ask you to do a couple of things as we start to set up this dialogue. You know, first and foremost, as a woman or a person of color, you need to know your value. And you don't need to apologize for who you are or what you bring to the table. Can I hear amen? I mean, just like enough. And honestly, not that I would, you know, subscribe to anybody leaving any organization, but the time has come for us to say, either you play me or you trade me, right? And we need to create opportunities for ourselves. I love that, you know, our introducer has now full circle come to create a new opportunity for yourself. This is what's going to happen in the marketplace, you guys. And the reason is because we operate in a VUCA environment. How many people are familiar with that term? All right, for the vast majority who may not have ever heard the term, VUCA stands for volatile, it's uncertain, it's complex, and it's ambiguous. Now, how does that relate to what diverse employees bring to the table? A couple of things. Number one, women influence $15 trillion worth of buying power, okay, globally. $15 trillion. I would really ask you guys to go back to your organizations and do your own math. All of you who have teams, those teams correlate up to some value equation to that organization. And so when you show up, you should show up with pride and confidence, and you should articulate with power what you bring to the table, right? Secondly, what we know is that women tend to be more collaborative. This is no ding on the men, okay? Men bring a lot of stuff to the table, and when I was doing my research for my second book, one of the things that I really uncovered is that women haven't been given credit yet for our skills. It's too soft. You need to become more strategic. Hello, I have a whole brain for a reason, okay? And so I'm not discounting what men bring to the table, but what I am saying is that most companies are very silo-based. And if your company is going to remain relevant in a VUCA marketplace, the speed of execution must increase. And how do we increase that? Collaboration. That's why collaboration is the sexiest word alive in corporate America right now. Everybody wants to collaborate, yeah? Okay, so we are naturally collaborators. And the research says, at least my research, I'm sure research of others says, that women are naturally more inclusive than others. Okay? We want people to work together. Now, one thing, women, that we've got to admit, and this is where we need to take a page from the guys, we are collaborative until you piss us off. And then what happens is, you know, we store that experience all in our body, and then one day when we have our, you know, red base heels on, right, somebody steps on our baby toe, and then we become like the exorcist, right? So we've got some things that we've got to learn, too, and we definitely can learn from the guys. Guys can duke it out all day long and be like, dude, bud for you, bud for me, cool, let's do it. Right? And now, I'm not having a bud with you, you know, if you stepped on my baby toe. I'm just sorry. It's not going to happen. And so we've got to be mindful of some of those things. But as we start this morning, in all seriousness, there is such a profound opportunity for us to show up and for us to be disruptors. And so in the VUCA marketplace, we need you guys to leave with a mindset of being a disruptor in terms of the way business is done, a disruptor in the terms of the way people are developed, a disruptor in the way we manage our relationships with our vendors, our partners. See, for years gone by, corporations would make decisions in a silo, in a vacuum, and then they'd shove the product down the throat of the consumer. But as you'll hear in just a second, the consumer doesn't play that anymore. Okay? The consumer has the power. And so to be a disruptor, you need to know who you are and what value that you bring to the table. And then you've got to be bold and courageous. You got to find that passion that allows you to use your voice in a very, very intentional way. And so we hope that through our dialogue today, we're able to give you that. Then the next thing, and perhaps the final thing before I invite our esteemed panelists up to the stage, is when you leave here today, subsets of one last thing, we need to go out and create early adopters. See, there are going to be some people who lead the way. Those are disruptors. And because they have the courage, they bring along what's called early adopters. Now, what am I talking about? I'm talking about women leaving here bound, committed, and convicted to help other women. Can I have an amen? It's a little pet peeve of mine, right? It's really a pet peeve of mine. And so I just want to throw out a challenge, and we'll be throwing out challenges as we go on in our dialogue. Find a woman that you don't know while you're here and ask her a simple question. What can I do to help you? Just start there, you guys. And it's going to be amazing how when you touch a person, that that person is somehow going to touch you in a very special, special way. And then to create early adopters, this is what I would extend to you as a challenge. For any male that's here, and power to my brothers who sit in the audience, right on, brother, right on. Got you? Yes. Over there, got you? Yeah, you got your wingtips on? Okay, just saying, just checking. But you know what? We got a Mr. DQ here. It's like a little light pink, purple thing happening right there. Yes, that's you, sir. And, you know, power to you. I mean, if you can rock it, rock it. So I need for you guys to think about who you are going to share. Who are you going to talk to about what you experience here? Please don't leave here and do nothing. Honor yourself and honor these great panelists who are about to take the stage by doing something when you go back. Now, our job in the next 45 minutes is to give you practical ideas and steps and tips and strategies that you can use. So I'll be asking some questions of our panelists. We'll take them one at a time, and then we'll definitely stop in time for you guys to ask questions. So I want you to be thinking about your questions. We want this to be interactive. In fact, if the Spirit moves you and you want to ask a question, you know, impromptu, that's what these microphones are for. We want this to be value added, and the only way that we can make this value added is for us to hear your voice. So two more questions. One, how many of you believe that your organizations have made substantive advancement on diversity and inclusion, by show of hands? Okay, we've got some. And then how many of you would say, I am personally struggling with showing up and being accepted for what I bring to the table? Okay, all right, that helps. That helps a lot. So we promise that we'll be transparent. We will demonstrate boldness, hopefully. We're going to tell the truth. We're going to touch the truth. And then we hope that you will leave empowered to do something different with it, right? All right, so that's me. And now let me invite our panelists to come to the stage with me. And you guys, it might be easier if you come from that way. I'm going to ask Sukhinder Singh Cassidy, who is the founder and CEO of Joyous, to welcome herself to the stage, and I'll welcome you too, and you guys welcome her. And next, we would like to welcome Kathleen Malahi, who is VP of Careers at Udacity. And boy, have you guys been to the website? How many people have been to the website? Yeah, a lot of people don't know about this, and I really want to have her really share about the disruption that her organization is making. And then last but not least, we have the man, okay? He is Jonathan Davidson. And Jonathan is, yeah. I mean, let's clap for him. You know, look, we cannot do this by ourselves. We need partnerships with strong men and men who get it, right? And this dude gets it because his babies knock him across the head at night and then his woman talks to him. Okay, anyway. But he is EVP and General Manager for Juniper Development and Innovation. And we need to give him an extra dose of love because Juniper is a title sponsor for today's event. So a round of applause. All right. So I'm going to engage with each one of you, and then we'll have a chance to do some talking in general. You know, Sukhinder, you talked about 18 or 20 years of watching what was going on in corporate, and something stirred you to want to give back. And your focus is on empowering women, right? I mean, you are doing that through the creation of a nonprofit, mm-hmm. and then you're also doing it in terms of closing the gender and diversity gap in the tech industry. Talk to me about where that passion comes from.
Sure. So, yeah, I do two things. I'm the CEO of a company called Joyous, which is a video shopping and commerce experience. It's a streaming shopping channel on the internet for women in fashion and beauty and lifestyle. And then I started a nonprofit about a year ago called The Board List, which is about putting more women on boards by creating a marketplace effectively in the tech industry. So what stirred me about a year ago? So the way I would describe it is, you know, I feel actually pretty fortunate. I feel like I came to Silicon Valley in 97. I feel like in many ways, I found my tribe. I just fit. Don't know why I fit, but I fit. And I felt like I fit, and I was with like-minded people, and I've had a great career here. But it did bother me. Maybe starting 2 or 3 years ago, it was probably, you know, 14, where I was just frustrated by the narrative on women in tech. Mm-hmm. Because it was in, you know, a streaming negative narrative. And I was frustrated for a couple reasons. Number one, as a founder, I sort of felt, and I'm a second-time founder, I started a company when I first got here called Yodlee before I went to Google. And I've just started my other company, Joyce, about 5 years ago. And I was just frustrated. The voice of female founders was nowhere in the equation. The press was commenting, VCs were commenting, everyone was commenting on the state of women, but there were no women founders commenting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we got 100 female founders and CEOs together, and we penned a letter called Choose Possibility, which really was serving our own findings on what was going on. Mm-hmm. And so I guess for me, it felt like I was sitting on the sidelines, and even though I feel like I've largely been a really good recipient mm-hmm. of a lot of good things in the Valley, and I just wanted to acknowledge that there are really big problems, but there's also kind of a narrative that goes far beyond gender. Mm-hmm. And things only change if somebody steps out and says, okay, I'm going to try and iterate my way there towards a solution. And so I don't think the Valley is going to move anywhere if people don't start trying a lot of different things. And some are going to work and some aren't going to work. Mm-hmm. But the point is you have to iterate. I mean, that's the way the entire Valley runs. Like, that's how innovation happens.
Yeah.
And so why not in this category? Why not in gender?
So you're speaking really volumes to this notion of disruption, right? Mm-hmm. Now, imagine that you're not a CEO and that you don't have years of experience mm-hmm. and maybe you don't have the network that you do now. Mm-hmm. And you're sitting in the audience and you're wanting to find your voice. You're wanting to use your voice. Hey, but the reality is you also need your paycheck, right? And some people are crazy. I mean, you know, seriously, they don't take their medication and they come to work. And you know, we have to work with them. And so what is the practical advice that you would give to the people who... Obviously, you guys are here because you want to make a difference. You want to do something. Mm-hmm. But what would you say to them that they should be doing where they are now?
So my first piece of advice is, my first piece of advice is you are an actor in your own play at work. So if you somehow think you're in the audience at work, you're not. Okay, so if you are upset about the culture, you are part of it. Okay, if you are believing that there's a lot of stuff going on around you, I would say, like, you are the actor in your own play, including your work play. So my first piece of advice is, you know, obviously our job is to show up constructively to make progress, right? And I think, you know, if I were to step back and say, like, look, in situations where I've been frustrated, like, what do I do? Because, I mean, I get frustrated just like everybody else. I mean, mm-hmm. it doesn't mean if you're a CEO you don't get frustrated or see things you want to change. But what I try and do is stop, identify my frustration, regroup, assemble my thoughts, and then I have a game plan. And yeah. I go in and I say what I have to say, and I try and say it constructively, mm-hmm. right? And in order to not be emotional, because I'm a very emotional person, I mm-hmm. try and, like, I'm like, what are the points I need to make, mm-hmm. right? So, but it is about, I mean, I know it sounds really simple, but it is about using your voice. I mean, so ultimately you have to, you noted this, you have to find a place where you culturally fit. I get that. right? I mean, I've quit jobs where I don't culturally fit. So I'm in by no means saying you're miserable, you know, who you are and what your company's values are don't line up. Yeah, that's a hard one to solve. Mm-hmm. But to be honest, it starts with you saying something. I mean, you are the actor in your own play. And so I think the key is if you are junior and if you're not the CEO, like, how do you say it? Well, you say it constructively. You plan what you're going to say, right? You think about what the outcome and the response is going to be. You step in and you, as Cheryl would say, you lean in. Because at the end of the day, I actually am not a believer that anything solves around you if you don't step in. And so and so I think it is about, but it's about framing it. If you know, if you don't believe you're in a natural position of power, it is about framing it. It's about framing it in the language, you know, of what's good for the company.
That's
it's
right.
About,
that's
but,
right.
I mean,
so I want to offer some practical tips. And I'll do that as we go through. First and foremost, you get a voice when you're delivering results. Let's not get it twisted. If your stuff is raggedy, don't try what she just said. You will be fired, okay? You will get a to-go box real fast, all right? So we don't want you guys getting to-go boxes, so what we want you to know is you get your voice when you're delivering value. And that's why I said this morning that when I started that you've got to know your value. You've got to speak in terms that correlate to the bottom line. Like, how much does your team actually contribute to the bottom line? And then this goes back to something we'll talk about perhaps when we have open mic. You need a sponsor. You need some air cover. So don't step out by yourself. Transformation doesn't happen in isolation. Transformation happens in community. So you need to get some early adopters to come along with you, and there is power in numbers. But the point that Sukhinder is making is really, I mean, just we lucked out with you being first and this foundational point being made. You're either a part of the problem or you're a part of the solution. And so today, we extend that invitation before you. What do you want to do? So the next time you hear yourself saying, I wish that they would do blah, 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 you or they. Now, game on. What do you want to do? All right? So thank you very much. We'll rotate.
Can I rotate out of the
hot
seat?
Yes, you can rotate out of the hot seat. I love it. You can rotate out of the hot seat. I love that. Oh, you know what, you guys? One of the wonderful things that Vicki Howell and her team did in creating this opportunity was to ensure that we had the millennial voice. I personally think baby boomers have a lot to learn from millennials. That's not to say millennials don't have a lot to learn from baby boomers. But, you know, every time a baby boomer says, it's 5 o'clock on Friday, I'm just getting my second wind. And the millennial says, okay, have fun with that because I'm out. Secretly, the baby boomer is saying, I want to go with you. I want to do what you're doing. That's what really is the truth. And so I just want to thank you, Kathleen, for being here. You just got a really interesting background. I mean, you were part of the creation of
Udacity,
yeah. Right? And so why did you do that?
So I wasn't a founder, but I joined very early before we were funded. And so I was telling people earlier, like, where did the name come about? I was one of the people who actually set the name for Udacity, and it comes from the Latin root odax, which is the root for audacity. And what we're trying to do with education is provide more access. We state our mission as, you know, is to democratize education. And so what we did back in 2011 and 2012 was put up a lot of courses online for free. And these are, you know, Stanford courses, courses taught by industry leaders and university leaders. And since then, we've actually realized that, you know, just putting information online isn't so helpful. Actually giving people a path to use that information in their lives is actually even more important. And so we have this product called the Nano Degree, where we take you from not having the skills you need to start a career in tech or to further your career in tech, and we actually get you there. And that's what I'm responsible for. So VP of Careers is, if you come to Udacity to learn, I help you get a job. And so that is what we do. And the reason why I care so much about this, and you and I spoke about this yesterday, my family is really young. So my parents were 17 when they had my older brother. And they were 19 when they had me. They both had to drop out of college. My parents are probably the same age as a lot of people in this room, or even younger. They're 48.
Oh, wow.
47, 48, yeah. So it's an interesting experience coming from a place where you just don't actually have as much access to things as your peers.
Yeah.
And so when I went to college, my dad actually took a second mortgage to pay for my first year. Mm. And then I paid for the rest. And so when I left college, I had $42,000 in debt. And, you know, when I looked at the state of my peers, everybody actually was missing out because you don't know what your path is going to be. You go to college thinking like, okay, my university is actually going to help me figure this out. And that's not true. You know, I majored in geography. I lucked out and I ended up working on Google Maps, which Sukhinder also actually worked on very early on. So it worked out that I was able to find this, but it's only through a lot of luck and perseverance that it happened. And that's not always available to people. So I joined Udacity because, you know, I want people to have that access and I don't want them to lose the opportunity to try things out before they make a big financial and time commitment.
That's good. You know, what her life is a testimony to is today is the first day of the rest of our lives. So if you're sitting here and you're not happy, right, with where you're positioned in terms of your organization or even what career path that you've taken, there's no reason why you have to stay bound to something that doesn't work. Course correction is a beautiful thing. And I think it just takes a lot of courage, though, to, you know, if you put 10, 15 years into your career to look up and say, okay, I may have made a mistake. I mean, I spent 18 years in corporate and looked up one day and said, who am I? I don't even like who I am. It's scary. Once you're on all of us, you guys, all of us are on the drug. The drug is called money. That's the drug, right? And so money can really hold you hostage, you right? And so people are graduating today with hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of debt.
Right.
And they don't know what they're going to do with that degree.
Yep.
And so how do you guys try and to convince people to show up and leverage their diversity, their own diversity, as you place people into jobs? What do you say to them?
Yeah, I try to encourage people to own their identities. You are... you know, the cumulative experience of your years and experiences, right? So if you're looking to become, you know, a data analyst and you have a background in marketing, that's actually amazing because you know like a key area where you can take that experience and actually add it to being a data analyst and actually have a lot of context and understanding for something. And I think that's one of the misconceptions that people have, especially in, you know, the 25 to 45 age range, mm-hmm. is that, you know, if you're going to change your careers, you have to start from scratch. That's really not the case. So companies actually do like to see that you have diverse experiences, and you're going to bring that diversity to the table, whether that be your career diversity or your ethnic diversity or your socioeconomic diversity.
Mm-hmm.
Those are actually all very important, and understanding the utility of those experiences is actually very critical in when you're looking to either change your career or mm-hmm. further your career in another way.
Mm-hmm. And I think from a practical application perspective, the jobs that are going to exist in 5 years do not exist today. It is going to be in response to the changing demands of the consumer that whole new departments will be created. And so I think the point that we want to make to you is know what your capabilities are and understand how those capabilities transcend and transfer to whatever path that you might want to create for yourself in the future, right? There's lots of studies that we could cite that speak volumes to what you're talking about, but I think that a good example of a disruption that created all new kinds of opportunities. And this is an old one, but years ago, Walmart, the CEO at the time was Lee Scott. And Lee Scott, at a board meeting, came out and said that Walmart was going to pave the way for sustainability, right? Anybody work in the Office of Sustainability now? Anybody in here? That's something that you want to take a look at because companies now have to be responsible for what they're doing, and the millennial employee wants to work for an organization that is corporately responsible. But an organization like Walmart said, we're going to take a stance, and overnight, positions were created. And I would just humbly say, I'm not a futurist, but I think you guys are onto something. I think that you're going to see what futurists are talking about, a very dramatic shift in the way education is delivered and how it's used in the future. So thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it. And you get to get off the hot seat. And then my man.
All right.
Jonathan. You know, what's really cool about Jonathan, you guys, is that he's a dad. And, you know, obviously we had a chance to chat with each of you beforehand. And, you know, I heard Jonathan talk about his kids. And I wanted to know, like, all right, so you're a straight white man. You do associate with being white, right? I'm just saying, you know.
One of those is definitely right.
One of those is definitely right. And so as a white male who, incidentally, this is who we have to partner with. Because white men run the business world in the United States of America, right? Yes, amen. I'm with you. All right, so you had some life experiences that you talked about that sort of illuminated the importance of people owning their identity. You recognized in those experiences the power, really, of diversity and inclusion. Could you just start by sharing a little bit of how you, on your path, came to discover it?
Sure. I think the first big part of it was just growing up with being lucky enough to be surrounded by powerful women. My mom was one who empowered one girl, three boys. Everybody can do everything. My older sister was a total jock and a brainiac to boot and got scholarships. So trying to chase her my whole life. I was lucky enough that my wife has a diverse experience where she went off and lived in Africa for 2 years out in the bush. Learning that, kind of just growing up, to then getting into the corporate world, and I was at Cisco for 15 years, which for those of you who might have been there, is I would consider a hyper-aggressive culture. And you saw different paths of how people navigated their way through that type of a culture. And some people would say, okay, I'm going to be hyper-aggressive and see how that goes on both sides of the gender. Mm-hmm. And then I saw that when women tried to be hyper-aggressive, the men would say, wow, she's so aggressive. And they would use other terms, sometimes the B word. And then I would see guys doing it, and they wouldn't say the same thing about the guy. And I found that very perplexing. Yeah. And also what I found at the same time was whether I had a team of 6 people or 30 people or more, having diversity of thought inside of my team actually enabled us to achieve things that I don't think would have been possible. We were able to challenge each other. Mm-hmm. There was a calming effect about having the diversity of thought in the room. Mm-hmm. And so I started to watch. I'm a big watcher of people. Mm-hmm. And looking and watching how people just talk and drive meetings and communicate. And I like to think I picked from the best. And a lot of what I started to find over the years is I was pulling more things from the females around me and incorporating that into what I was doing because they were just more effective at getting things done.
Mm-hmm. You know, I love what you're saying. And, you know, if we open ourselves up and we share our stories, then that's going to incite someone like Jonathan who has a story to tell. I think a lot of times we assume, make assumptions about the people that we work with. Most people don't wake up going, I want to destroy you today. Most people, if they took their medicine. But most people have life experiences like yours. And so, you know, if you were to give some advice, you know, you're an accomplished individual. You know, people might be intimidated by the fact that you are an EVP. I mean, let's go back, like I said to Sukhinder, let's go back to, okay, I'm a middle-level manager, okay? I observed what you observed, but when I call it out, maybe people discount what I'm saying. Yeah. How do we, as people, leaders, female leaders, people of color leaders, who want to advance the ball, how do we make an authentic connection with you? What do we do? What do we say?
Yeah. Well, telling jokes is certainly helpful.
Humor is powerful. It's
humor
true.
Is the most powerful weapon I think anyone has. Looking back on what I did back when I had, you know, six people on my team, and now we're at, you know, 3,500 plus at Juniper. You know, you'd be surprised at the number of people who, even at, when you're managing six people, are afraid to come in and actually do that reach out. And I remember I had a test engineer come to me, a female, was walking into my office one day, and I was working late, like 7:30 at night, and going, and she said, "What do I need to do to get into your team? I want to be in your team. How do I do that?" And I was like, "This is awesome. Sit down. Let me just write down the 10 things you need to do in order to be able to go from where you are to career progression." Mm-hmm. And she went away, and every 3 months she would come back, just check in, until a year later, and I ended up moving her into my team because she had done every single thing that had been done. And I've seen that where people might be slightly intimidated with somebody.
Right.
And you go, I know my dad was in the military for 23 years. I grew up in a very hierarchical family. And, you know, I said yes, sir, no, sir to my dad till I was past 18. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you called him dad. It was sir or no, yes, sir, no, sir. So you have that authority thing you need to just get over.
Right.
And it's always a little intimidating to go and talk to anybody. I think your advice was great. Find somebody randomly here to go up to and say, "Hi, how are you? My name is..."
Yeah. Because it's a safe environment. You can practice.
You can practice.
Right.
Give it a shot.
Right.
The thing is, what is the... I always play the what-if scenario with myself. What is the absolute worst thing that somebody will say to you if you go up and say, "Hi, my name is..."
Yeah.
Or anything. "Hey, I'd like to work on your team. What can I possibly do?" What's the worst thing they can do? Mm-hmm. "You're ugly. Get out." Right?
Right. I mean,
and no one's going to say that.
"I don't want you on my team."
Right? Mm-hmm. No one's going to say that. Everyone's going to be like, "Oh, wow, okay... How can I..." Most rational people, after taking their meds, mm-hmm. they are going to say, "Oh, okay, how can I help you?" That's,
yeah.
At least most people think that way.
That's good. That's really good. Well, I want to segue and start teeing up an opportunity for you to ask questions. And, you know, as a part of doing that, what I want to say to you guys in terms of what Jonathan just put on the table is, you must have relationships across the enterprise. Right? To drive innovation about the business or the way teams are transformed, you must have relationships. And so I would just extend an invitation to identify at least three people that you don't know now. And I really would make the offer to ensure that they're at least at a VP level or above, right? And I know that that can be really scary, but honestly, you guys, they're just people. Right? And if you're willing to do just a little bit of demonstrating that you're open, I think that people will meet you where you are. Now, when you have the conversation about you, about what value that you bring to the table, remember what I said earlier, people want people who can drive better business results. So your story must be rooted in a narrative. So Kendra, you talked about the negative narrative. I don't know, you know about you guys, but the words that come out of our mouths are very important, and you need to create your own narrative. So that's the first thing that we'd say to you before we open it up to questions. The second thing is, I'd like to give you a little bit of a homework assignment if you'd like to embrace this. Y'all stop laughing. There are people mm-hmm. who have been in my class and they're like, "Oh, here she goes with her homework assignments." Well, if I don't give you homework, you're not going to do anything, you know? So I would really invite you to go back and ask two or three people to give you two words that describe you as a leader. And take the feedback however it comes, and then go about the business of closing your own gaps and do exactly what Jonathan said. Touch base with this person. And then the third thing is, once you have that trust built and a real relationship built, then you can start to say, "You know, I have noticed that in our culture, you know, women or people of color are not, you know, really being optimized," right? So we could say the negative, they're not being used and welcomed. Rather, we would say, in board speak, of course, they're not being optimized. And then that's that's going to conjure up, "Well, what do you think we should do?" Right? We're not optimizing them. Why? Because it's all about the business, right? This is not kumbaya. We're not doing this because we want to feel good. We're doing this because we are business leaders who happen to be female or happen to be whatever your background, and we want to add the value. So extend the olive branch of trust and really start to advance the conversation within your respective organizations. Do what Sukhinder said, use your voice. Do what Kathleen said, which is be bold and courageous and create a new path. And then do what Jonathan said, which is step out. Step out. And so now we extend the opportunity for you to ask questions. Anybody can jump up to the mics that are there. I think we have our first question. Would you do me a favor and tell us your name and what company that you're with?
Hi, I'm Danielle Harlan. Can you hear me? I don't know if this works. Okay. I'm Danielle Harlan, founder and CEO of the Center for Advancing Leadership and Human Potential. We're based here in San Jose. One of the things we work on is going into organizations and focusing on both unintentional and intentional discrimination and bias. And I'm curious to hear from the panelists your perspective on what is it that your organizations are doing well in this regard to address that, and what do you think they could do even better? What do you think is necessary here? Thank you.
Jonathan?
Sure. So Juniper is hit this straight on. In fact, our head of talent and diversity is in the back of the room. You know, you have to make it personal. And the first thing you need to do, which Trudy mentioned earlier, is you have to lead by example. So this is something that we track, whether it's gender or generational or ethnicity. You have to track it. You have to make it part of the ongoing conversation. You have to lead by example. When I started as a general manager almost 4 years ago at Juniper, only one of my direct staff, my assistant, was female. Now a third of my team is my direct staff is female. In the last year, we have actually grown our Y population by 10%. Mm-hmm. All right? So the ability to go and focus it. Most of my team is engineers. Most of them are type A. If you put stats in front of them and you say, there is a bias here, it's clear, I need you to focus on this, a little bit of competition starts, and then the numbers start to move. There's always going to be a few individuals that need a little more than just show, and you need to push. One of the big things we've done, there's been training that's been available. So we've gone and done unconscious bias training. That was one of the highest attended sessions for my team that we've ever had. People want to change. They just don't always know what the skills are, the language, where to look, how to actually make a difference in that category.
That's good. Questions on this
better?
Side?
Sorry.
Yeah,
what
follow
do you think
up?
They could do better?
Everyone can always do better at everything. The question was, what do you think they could do better? You know, the key is to continue to match it, model it, and move forward. There are always going to be a few folks who don't get it, and they may not survive. And you have to say, at a certain point, you draw a line in the sand, you say, if you don't make the switch, you're not part of the culture that we want here. And so that has to be part of the communication path as well, so people know that you're going to take it seriously.
Yeah, and I would just admit that I would really like to see organizations establish cultural competencies as a leadership expectation. Because, you know, whatever gets focused on in terms of compensation, that's where people are going to spend their time. I mean, everybody is overloaded as it is, and I don't think that companies have got there yet. So in terms of your second question of what could people do better, what could organizations do better, I work with organizations, and I really try and push that, you know, we don't have to look, and diversity and inclusion is embedded like 10 levels down. Oh, it's in there. I can't see it. Like, put it front and center on your value statements. You guys, this is how you can use your voice, right? If your value statement at your organization does not call out the power of diversity and inclusion, bring it up as an opportunity for transformation. That's so easy and simple. Now, you got to have your own narrative, which means that you got to do your homework. Jonathan said, you know, teams are more diverse. Clearly, are more beneficial in terms of innovation and creative problem solving. Sukhinder said, obviously, you believe that boards that are diverse are better boards. I mean, obviously, you share sentiments from your perspective. And so you need some numbers. You know, don't just go in and try and, you know, shoot from the hip. Be armed with a connection to the business. Yes, ma'am. I don't think so. I think we've had some challenges.
My name is Christy Barrows from Intel. You sort of just started to talk about what I'm going to ask, but what are your recommendations for rewarding leaders and individuals for exhibiting the behaviors that you want to see in terms of diversity and inclusion in the organization?
So, Kinder, I'm going to ask you to take that one because, you know, you deal with the board level. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, the board should be putting pressure on the CEO in the spirit of love, truly, right? But what do you think?
Well, I think there are a couple of things. So, first of all, Joyous is a small company. It's 50 people. So, you know, unlike Juniper, I mean, you know, when I was at Google, obviously, we had a very ingrained system of rewards, right? In a small company, rewards are often telling somebody they did a good job, you know, really sending out an email. And, of course, we have a performance system, you know, that ties to stock and other things. But I think when you think about kind of motivating teams in this direction, you know, Jonathan sort of hit on it. On the one hand, I think you need to be able to track, right? I think that is a very... I mean, and you need to align to compensation in bigger organizations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, in small organizations, you can say that, but quite frankly, the organization is so small
right.
that, like, it's more about who's walking the walk and who's talking the talk. Mm-hmm. And in those cases, I think it's far more about what you make explicit in a small culture. So a recent example is at Joyous. We've had a leadership transformation, and I've brought in two new heads of the business, and they're both men. And their predecessors were both women. So I pulled four of our female senior leaders in a room, directors, and I said, hey, like what we used to just take for granted, which was, you know, I had two more females in the leadership team and now mm-hmm. I have two men. I realized that, like, you know, there's a risk that, like, what just used to come to us really easily, we may now need to think about a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So I need your help in thinking about that. So, you know, like, and by the way, I think the power of inclusion and the reward is having the conversation. So I think in smaller companies, it isn't always about there's an explicit reward, like, God, like, if you don't do this, mm-hmm. you know, your comp is hit. I mean, mm-hmm. no offense, that's not really realistic in a company.
It's not the motivator.
25 or 50 people. But right. I think what is in that culture is, like, being explicit, being transparent, talking about the issue, and asking people to lean into the solution. So in this case, I mean, we just have a shared Google Doc, and it's like, okay, guys, I don't know the solution. I mean, yes, I'm a female CEO, and we have a very diverse workforce. I mean, you know, more than 50% of Joyce is women. But I recognize that if you're fearful that, like, you know, of something changing, we just may need to be more deliberate about it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and one of the things that came up in that very first session is like, hey, we do drinks at 5 o'clock, and you know what? When we go out for drinks at 5 o'clock, that doesn't really work for me because I want to go home and see my kids. I'm like, mm-hmm. got it. All right, mm-hmm. we'll move drinks to 4. Okay, mm-hmm. enough. Let's go. What's next?
I
will tell you the truth that comment did not come up until I pulled four senior women into a room, a conference room.
Yeah,
just
to
think
have
about
the
that.
Dialogue.
How come nobody said?
Yeah.
You know what? We don't really want to go drinks at 5. We want to go at 4. All right, then. Simple.
You know, nothing
just
happens.
Tell me.
Nothing happens without the conversation.
You know, we'll just
right?
say you have. So I think the reward in a small company is very different.
That's
it's
good.
About being explicit.
Kathleen, I'm curious to see, what do you tell, you know, people that are looking for a job mm-hmm. in terms of culture that would be embracing of diversity of thought, diversity of ethnicity, socioeconomic, all the things that you talked about?
Yeah, so... Hiring is a tricky matter, especially when you're coming from a non-traditional background. So, because we focus on hiring software engineers or helping software engineers get hired, there are still oftentimes requirements for, you know, a CS degree, even though there are so many studies that say that having a degree at all, much less a CS degree, correlates to anything in terms of job performance. And so there are many companies who are taking that down. And what we coach people on is if you're feeling like an imposter, and I'm sure everybody here has an idea of imposter syndrome and probably feels it day to day. I feel it right now on this stage.
No need.
But it's something that you can if you recognize it, you can counteract it. And so if you see that you are feeling that you are maybe not as good as somebody else, coming up for a job, you can highlight that in the way that you're presenting yourself, and you look for companies who specifically say that they are looking for diverse teams.
Yeah.
You look for people who actually have the EEOC, you know, disclaimer in their job description saying that they are not discriminating, because you're not required to have that actually. Companies have to choose to put that on their job descriptions. You can also look for companies who have good gender balances. There are a lot of companies who are actually publishing those stats. The millennial perspective that you asked for is that we do care about what we work on. We want to, I work many, many hours, you know, probably 8-hour weeks, but I do it because I love what I do and I care about helping people. And so when you're looking for a job and you're looking for a company culture that's really going to care about what you care about, look for common interests.
That's good. That's real good. All right, we have time for one quick question. Yes, ma'am.
All right, and my question is a little bit more of a practical question for you as well. You guys all talked about owning your identity, being proactive. In sort of millennial, sort of post sort of in a down economy, entering the career workforce, what should you be doing to create opportunities? I often find we're in situations where I am proactive, but the opportunity is not there. Internally, maybe in your team, Jonathan, there's no space. The economy rises, job growth rises. What should you do to create that opportunity for yourself? Maybe some practical tips.
Sure. I mean, every company, even in down environments, still does intern programs because interns are wonderfully cheap.
You as a man. I love it.
And so, what we've found is that we actually learn more from interns, so to speak, than I think they actually learn from us. Now, they say they learn a lot from us as well. But I can tell you, we have done just last year, we have actually transformed how we test our products. And we've been in business 20 years now because of an intern engineer in Bangalore came in, looked at it, and said, this is dumb, went and talked to a bunch of his friends, came back, and in 3 weeks had completely revamped what we had been doing for 20 years. Now, this was an intern. Right? This wasn't even a full-time hire yet. Now, granted, we really want to hire that person. But the point is that there are always ways to get in. Now, if you have a family, you've got a mortgage, it's a little hard to go intern places.
Yeah.
But if you are early, like what you mentioned, in your career, people are always willing to take on and give you a shot, and then you can prove yourself or at least build out that new skill set and show on your resume or your CV that you are capable of doing X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, and I would just piggyback upon what Jonathan said and say, find an opportunity to get on a task force in that department, right? So let everybody know, all your key stakeholders know, that you want to add value. Tell them how you want to add value. And then if there is a task force in the business where the senior leader can actually see your work, then you're better positioned because you're a known brand versus not being known. Does that make sense?
If I could add one more thing.
Yeah.
So there's a beautiful transformation happening in technology sector. And the power of open source communities is growing. It is
yes.
a meritocracy. So it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what company you came from. You vote with the software that you're writing. And I was in an Uber driving somewhere in New Jersey. And this guy, I was on the phone talking to somebody. I hung up and he goes, what do you do? He said, I have a CS degree and I've been out of college for 7 years. I can't find a job. And I said, what are your skills? This. I said, you need to go join an open source community. Go look at OpenStack. Go look at other things and just start writing software. You will make relationships and you will eventually get hired.
Yeah.
Do it at night because he had family, he had kids.
Yeah.
Do it at night. It's okay. Eventually, someone will hire you.
Okay. So as we close, we want to say again, thank you. We hope that you're leaving with some practical tips. Let me just ask each of the panelists, if there is one thing that you would say, please remember to do this very quickly, one sentence, what would you say? Go with the millennial first. Go ahead.
Speak up.
Speak
and
up.
If you see a problem, say something about it.
Love it.
Even if it doesn't go out well.
That's right. Yeah. Right on. Yes, ma'am?
Speak up.
Speak up.
Oh,
love it.
So much pressure.
Maybe you speak up.
I would say vote with your feet.
Right? Vote with your feet, yes. And I would say it's a relationship economy. Go build relationships. Find your voice. Use your voice. Create the future of your dreams because you are empowered and positioned to do so. Enjoy the conference. Thank you. Round of applause.